Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But, well, it looks like we don't have our guests for this hour, so we'll just ask if you want to give us a call. Why, we'll be glad to talk to you. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And if Mr. Vladimir Bukovsky comes, why we'll hold off on the calls. But right now, why, we'll be glad to talk to you, because I don't have anything planned for this hour. However, I might continue what we started last hour, and that is this supposition, and it is my belief, that the government knew who the hijackers were ahead of time. Now, why would I say that? You know, that's a terrible thing to say, and yet, you know, the 911 Commission report was simply a cover-up. Nobody was accused. Nobody was guilty. It was the process. It was the process was at fault, a terrible process. The process should be fired, or we'll get a new director of the intelligence. But George Tenet was already the director of intelligence. He was the supreme commander of all the intelligence agencies, and everybody knew that. And certainly the 911 Commission knew that, but they have to come up with some sort of an explanation of why things didn't work that morning. Well, on that Tuesday morning. And so let me just point out why I believe that they knew exactly ahead of time. And those of you listening the last hour, remember that we were talking about how on April of 2000, a Pakistani hijacker walks into the Newark office of the FBI. Now, this is all in Eleanor Hill's story, testimony on the 18th of September 2002 before the Joint Select Committee. Remember, there were two committees, the Joint Select Committee and then the 911 Commission. A lot more came out in the Joint Select Committee than came out in the 911 Commission, except for the 911 Commission staff report, which has some very, very revealing information. Obviously, somebody got that information and slipped it in, because you'll see a lot of that covered in my latest newsletter. But we do know that the Pakistani hijacker comes in. This is what, almost a year and maybe 5-6 months before the 911 attack, and he says, "I'm a Pakistani hijacker. I'm part of a hijacking team, and we're going to hijack a 747. We've been trained how to do this. We know how to use violence to take over the plane, and if necessary, we'll blow up the plane." So what does the FBI do? They give him a lie detector test. They find out he's telling the truth. He gets another lie detector test. He's telling the truth. So what a wonderful opportunity to have him infiltrate the hijackers and stop the whole plot. They report the fact that they've got this man with them there in Newark, New Jersey. He's desperate for money. He's been given $3,000. He's gambled it away. They give him a few thousand dollars. He'd certainly be willing to infiltrate this hijacking group, these Islamic terrorists who are going to hijack our planes. And what does Washington, D.C. do? Why, they say, get this man out of here, send him immediately back to Britain, even send your agents with him to make sure he leaves the country and gets back to Britain. Now, the logical thing would be, why didn't they use him and try to identify the hijackers? Why didn't they have them infiltrate the group? Why didn't they have him stay there so they could be advised of what's going on? And my supposition is, I believe they knew ahead of time exactly what was going on, but they don't dare let the American people tell that. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty, and we'll welcome your calls. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we were hoping to have a Mr. Vladimir Bukovsky with us, who is a Russian immigrant, has a wonderful story to tell. He was to call us from Great Britain, and, well, he hasn't called, so it's just going to be you and me talking here for the next hour. So we'll have open lines, and if you'd like to give us a call, I number 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But right now we were talking about why I sincerely believe that the FBI knew who the hijackers were ahead of time, and I was simply talking about the story, and we have the documentation. Anybody wants this, or you can go to Eleanor Hill's testimony. That's Eleanor Hill's testimony before the Joint Select Committee on the 18th of September 2002, when she told about this Pakistani hijacker who walked into the Newark office of the FBI and said, I'm a Pakistani hijacker, and I'm part of a group that's going to hijack one of your 747s and, if necessary, blow the plane up. But the FBI didn't follow through on the story. They sent the man back to Pakistan, in fact, back to England. In fact, they wanted to be sure they got him out of the country rather than trying to get him to work with the group and find out what the plan was and where the plans were. So obviously, either we have the stupidest people in the world in Washington, D.C., or they knew exactly what was going on, but they did not want the people at the local office to know, and they sure didn't want to keep the man here in the United States and have him infiltrate the hijacking team. Because, of course, then they wouldn't be able to justify saying, gee, we had no idea what was going on. Well, there's so many other things in the staff report of the 911 Commission. You can pull this down off the Internet. It's 17 parts. It'll take you about 2 days to read it, but it's well worthwhile. First of all, we find that the government was able to tell the staff everything about Muhammad Atta. In fact, they even had pictures of Muhammad Atta taking money out of an IBM machine in Virginia Beach, Virginia, 7 months before the attack. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I'm just talking about what the government knew ahead of time about the hijackers. Now, the FBI then had given the staff committee of the 9/11 committee report a copy of a picture of Muhammad Atta drawing money out of an ATM machine in Virginia Beach, Virginia. It was, I think, in February of the year 2001. That would be 7 months before the 911 attack. And then, of course, 2 months later, they have another picture of him taking money out of an ATM machine. Now, I checked with our local bank manager, and she told me that, well, you always recycle those tapes, every 13 weeks. So neither one of those would have been in that field. She said the only time we keep our tapes and when we are ordered to. And so the question would be, who was it who ordered the bank managers back in Virginia to keep those tapes of Muhammad Atta drawing money out of the ATM machines? Somebody had to have the authority to give the order, but nobody ever asked that question. We know, for instance, that Zacharias Massouri, who has been on trial, has said he was watched from the moment he entered the United States. The FBI tracked him at every moment. And you probably heard the story of how Zacharias was up there in Minneapolis, and he was taking flight lessons. And the people up there at the flight school were immediately very, very suspicious of him. First of all, it didn't seem that he would be able to fly a plane. All he seemed to wanted to do was be able to fly the plane. He didn't worry so much about taking off and landing. At least was the initial story that we had. So the flight school people were suspicious of him, and they reported him to the FBI. And the local FBI reported it to Washington, D.C., and wanted permission to go through his computer. wanted a warrant to do it, and the FBI in Washington, D.C. refused to give them permission to go through his computer, despite the fact that the French intelligence told him he was a terrorist. They knew all about him. They'd been following him over in France. Isn't it interesting? They were following him in France. They knew he was a terrorist, but, oh, shucks, we didn't know he was a terrorist here. It's sort of like the story of Muhammad Atta. Why, we followed him all the time from January to June of the year 2000 when he was in Germany. The CIA followed him, but when he got to America, we just completely ignored him. And if you believe that, the Washington office of the FBI said, well, we don't believe there's enough reason to go through Zacharias Massoui's computer. We're not going to give you a warrant. You can get a warrant for just about anything you want to. But they absolutely blocked the people there in Minneapolis. And now we're told, oh, if they just connected the dots, there were the people in Phoenix and the Phoenix memo talking about all the Islamic terrorists are taking flying lessons, and they just put this together with the story of Zacharias Massoui, but nobody connected the dots, and that isn't true. Because I talked to the head of the flight school in Norman, Oklahoma, and of course she told me that 10 days before the attack, the FBI was there asking about Zacharias Massoui, and they wanted to know, everything about him. He'd been there. Now, the FBI, obviously, in Washington, D.C., was right on top of this incredible story, but you see, they can't let the American people know that, because if we realize what a great intelligence organization we have, why, we might question why nothing was done to stop the attack on September 11th. And if you work for the FBI and you try to bring out the truth, they will, of course, go after you. They'll destroy your reputation. They'll demonize you. You'll lose your pension. You'll lose your job. You may even lose your life. And the people in the FBI know that. That's why most of them keep quiet. There's a fellow in Chicago who's been trying to get the truth out. I mean, he was following and tracking the funds for Al-Qaeda years before the 9/11 attack. And every effort was made on the part of the people in Washington, D.C. to block cutting off the funds for him. I might even mention that 2 weeks after the, pardon me, 10 days after the 9/11 attack, the FBI was back at the flight school in Norman, Oklahoma. And they were talking to the head of the flight school there and asked her about Muhammad Atta. She didn't even know who Muhammad Atta was. But they knew he'd been to her flight school. They knew where he had stayed when he was in Norman, Oklahoma. They knew where he ate his meals in Norman, Oklahoma. How did they know all of that just 10 days after the 9/11 attack? Well, of course, Atta had actually gone to Norman, Oklahoma for training, decided not to go there. He went to a place in Venice, Florida called Huffman Aviation. And if you get Donald Papen, David Hopsicker's video on that subject, he will tell you that Hopsicker, Venice, Florida, Huffman Aviation, was a CIA front organization. At least that's his contention. So, why would Muhammad Atta pick a flight school that was associated with the CIA to take his training? Just doesn't make sense. Well, there are lots of things that don't make sense. And Fred's on the line. I just want to make one more point. I think it should be very, very obvious that something is strange about this story. And it's brought out in the staff report, the 9/11 Commission staff report. And all of this is covered in my upcoming newsletter, my July newsletter. But we're told that before the North Tower collapsed on September 11th, why, a passerby is walking along the street about two blocks away from the Trade Center, and he looks down on the sidewalk, and what does he see? He sees a passport, and he picks it up, and he gives it to a New York police officer, police detective, who turns it in, and who it is, but it's one of the hijackers. So apparently what had happened is this plane is crashing into the building, and there's a fiery inferno, and somehow the hijacker's passport gets out of his pocket, and then gets out of the flaming wreckage, and then gets out of the flaming inferno that is consuming the whole story there, the whole several floors of the building. In fact, the flyer is so hot it's able to melt the steel, a great big heavy steel. But this magical passport somehow escapes and flutters to the ground two blocks away from the World Trade Center and is picked up by a passerby. Now we know who one of the hijackers was. Or do we know who one of the hijackers was? Let me just ask you, what are the chances that story is true? Because the same thing happened at the Pennsylvania flight as well. What are the chances it's true? One in a hundred, one in a thousand, one in a million, one in a billion, one in 10 billion, one in a trillion. I'd say that the chances are almost impossible that that story could be true, and I think the evidence was obviously planted. And if it really were, why then, of course, somebody knew ahead of time who was supposed to be on that plane and forged the passport and planted it on the sidewalk. Or maybe they planted the person who was going to pick it up. But how, you know, if that happened, how do you think, do you really believe the same thing happened up there in Pennsylvania, where the fiery crash and this plane crashes into the ground and everything is burnt up? Only trouble is they've got a debris field of 8 miles away, and that one of the motors of this plane that crashes on the ground is 2 miles away. Must have bounced an awful long way. And if you believe this story, we're just not being told the truth. But supposedly another passport survived there, and we even had it up on the FBI webpage for several days, and we actually have pictures of that. But, you know, the incredible thing is that the American people are not being told the truth. Well, there's so much more to this story, and we'll have to get to that perhaps some other time. If you'd like to get a copy of our July newsletter, we'll be glad to send you one free of charge. Of course, we really hope that you'll want to subscribe to our newsletter. You can pull this down off the internet in about 10 days. It'll be posted there. That's the July newsletter, and we'll go into the background, and we'll tell you the smoking gun. We'll tell you what really happened that morning. Because it's right there in the 9/11 Commission report, only it wasn't in the one you're able to buy. You'll have to go up on the web to find it and go through thousands and thousands and thousands of pages. Well, but we have it there, and the smoking gun is there, and you can read it and understand what really happened that morning. Well, let's go to Fred, who's calling from Salinas. Hi, Fred. How are you doing?
Yes, good afternoon, Dr. Stan.
Good. It's good to have you with us.
I just wanted to say... wanted to make a comment. There was a man said that you take a situation where you create a situation in a country where you can instill fear in the people and keep that up long enough. He said you can mold the people in that country to do anything you want.
Mm-hmm. I think they're playing games with their minds, don't you?
That was Heinrich Himmler at the Nuremberg trials, and he was talking about how they created the situation in Germany so that Hitler could take over the country.
Now, are you sure it was Heinrich Himmler? Because I thought that he was but maybe I thought he had died before, but maybe did he actually go to the Nuremberg?
Yes, he went to Nuremberg.
Right. Okay. I guess it was Goebbels who committed suicide with his family.
Yes, Goebbels was the...
He was the propaganda minister.
He was the propaganda minister.
All right.
Anyway, that's the way it goes.
Well, I think that you have to realize we're being frightened to death. And have you ever noticed how that we just keep having these terror alerts, and we keep talking about terror and the danger of attacks and... But there haven't been any attacks since September 11th. No serious attacks in America. Yes, there have been some overseas. But how, if there really are all these terrorists here, our borders are open, how can it be there have been no terrorist attacks in the United States?
Well,
that somehow just doesn't make sense, does it?
Let's just see what happens before the election.
Well, I'll tell you what, if there is a terrorist attack, it will sure help the election of our current administration, won't it?
It will. We'll just have to see what happens.
All right, fine. Well, I think that there are a lot of unanswered questions out there. Our telephone number is
1-888. Have a good day.
Okay, fine. That was Fred calling. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And the most amazing thing, I don't know how many of you heard my interview with Dave Maquette, who is the leader or the chairman of the Airline Security Pilots Association or Pilot Security Association. You know, prior to the 9/11 attack, why pilots could carry weapons. Not most of them did not, but a lot of them did. Certainly they had the right to if they could. It was all right with the airline, and a lot of them carried weapons surreptitiously, but 2 months before the 9/11 attack, when the government knew the attack was coming, and if you don't believe that, you can go to the staff report. They had known this since the early 1990s. 2 months before the attack is coming, then they know they're going to hijack our plane and they're going to crash them into buildings. Why? Somebody in the government put out an order that henceforth no pilot on a commercial plane would be allowed to carry a weapon. Why would they do something that stupid unintentionally? We'll be right back here and welcome your calls. at 1-888-24-LIBERTY.
The Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large, until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, we'll be back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and our regularly scheduled guest didn't show up, so it's going to be just you and me. If you have something you'd like to talk about, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. So give us a call, and we'd love to hear from you. But you know, we've been sort of talking about what happened on the morning of September 11th, and there were just so many unanswered questions. And if you read Dr. Dennis Cuddy's book, he will point out that in New York City, why so many of the children in the Pakistani neighborhood adjacent to the Twin Towers brought their cameras to school on the morning of September 11th so they could see pictures of the Twin Towers coming under attack. And if you'd like to read the story, it's in Dr. Dennis Cuddy's book. It's in called September 11th, Prior Knowledge, or his book, Cover Up. They both go into the background of that. And he actually talked to the reporter who had actually followed through on that story in Washington, D.C. And what had happened is about a week before the 9-1-1 attack, one of the Pakistani children got up in the schoolroom, and they had windows, and you could look out and see the Twin Towers. And he said, you look at those Twin Towers, a week from now, they're not going to be here. And so apparently it was very common knowledge throughout New York that the attack was coming. Now, this is common knowledge, and believe me, the government has informants all throughout this country. They have them infiltrated into the police force. They have them infiltrated into the military. And in fact, at one time, I was even actually approached to become an informant by somebody from an intelligence agency. Of course, this was 40 years ago, and I didn't take the job. But believe me, this sort of thing really does go on in our society. But when you, how could it be that the government had no idea what was going to happen? Who was it who called Willie Brown, Mayor Willie Brown in San Francisco the night before the attack and said, you want to be very careful flying on September 11th? Why did Newsweek magazine report on two separate occasions, I think the 13th of September and the 24th of September, that highly placed government officials in the Defense Department canceled their flights for the 11th of September on the 10th of September? And yet, of course, when Dr. Cuddy actually talked to the editor of Newsweek magazine, he wouldn't talk about it. He just cut him right off. He gave all sorts of evasive answers and finally said, I don't want to talk about that. So, obviously, somebody is covering up information. There were a number of calls and we know this from people from Iran. There was one in England. There was another one here in the United States. People saying, there's going to be an attack on September 11th. They're going to attack the World Trade Center. They're going to hijack your planes. All of these stories, in fact, that story is actually told in my video for the Prophecy Club. I think it's called 911 Contrived, 911 Contrived, and you can hear that story, and we have all the documentation on it from so many sources. And the question is, if this is really true, then somebody knew the attack was coming and didn't do anything about it. This doesn't mean the president knew, but it could mean that other people who work within the administration knew. Why? Because they wanted to go to war with Iraq. And if you doubt that, you need to get the book by Paul O'Neill. It's called The Price of Loyalty. He was the Secretary of the Treasury. He attended the secret cabinet meetings in January and February of the year 2001. That's 8 to 9 months before the attack, or 7 to 8 months before the attack. And what are they talking about? Are they talking about Social Security? Are they talking about, the problems of our society and the cost of drugs? No, they're talking about how we're going to get into a war with Iraq, how we're going to divide up the oil in Iraq, how we're going to convince the American people we can justify a preemptive attack. And this is 7 to 8 months before the attack. It's all there, ladies and gentlemen. It was all planned ahead of time. We just needed an excuse. Well, let's go to Nathan, who's calling, and he has a general comment. Hi, Nathan. How are you doing?
Well, hi. Good afternoon, Dr. Stan. I'm sorry your guest didn't show up.
Oh, well, that always makes it interesting. This way we can have open lines and hear what you have to say.
Well, it's not a general comment, actually. It's specific to 911, but it leans beyond it. Regardless of what someone's explanation of 911 is, I think the real point is, how do we get out of this morass that we're in right now? How do we get out of this problem?
Well, if you're going into a swamp that's filled with alligators, you can either go forward or you can back out. And I think that we better back out of there, because if we do not, this war will go on forever.
Do you want me to hold over?
Okay, you're welcome to. We'll be glad to talk to you, and I'll ask Burke in Ohio to just hang in there, and we'll be back right after the break. And if you'd like to give us a call, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or I guess all the lines are filled up. We've got Bob from Texas holding on, too. And we have one more line, so you're welcome to call if you'd like. Anyway, we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
Chet genocide. And one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dinigan, who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America, the fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer, because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well tie up cancer. An incredible interview, and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and a few weeks ago, why, Kevin DeMeritt of Lear Financial contacted us and asked if he could sponsor some of our programs. Well, I looked into the background of the company. They have an excellent reputation, so I think it's a good time to think very seriously about investing in precious metals. Why? Because we have inflation, we have a progressively devalued dollar, that we've lost almost 30-40% of our value of our currency, and we know that people like Warren Buffett are investing overseas. They're not investing in American currencies. Why not give the people at Lear Financial a call at 1-888-302-7111, that's 1-888-302-7111, and ask for their free audio seminar. Again, the number 1-888-302-7111. I think this is an excellent time to consider protecting your assets.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patient.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we've got Nathan on the line. Nathan was asking, what are we going to do over there? So what are your thoughts, Nathan?
Well, it's not so much what we're going to do is more global and overarching. In other words, how are we going to get out of this? It's got to be a different mindset than how we got into this whole situation of terrorism and the war in Iraq and the problems that we face. And it's been my long-standing thesis that the only way we're going to get out of this is by a dedication to God, but not only to God in terms of acknowledging that there is a God and to God's providence, but also God's laws. In other words, we have to make a specific concerted effort to follow, because otherwise we're going to enter into a police state. I mean, it's inevitable if we don't do it, because you know, whether you believe that the terrorism is real, is part of a larger reality beyond itself or not, it's certainly real, but whether it's part of a broader picture or not, it's going to be there, and it's going to get us into a police state unless there is a halo of light and protection that is around this country.
All right, fine.
Of its righteousness.
But unfortunately,
I hear very few people talking about this, this aspect of the war on terrorism. It's not simply a war of guns and of bombs, and it shouldn't be. It should also be a war of rededication to the one true God, to his laws, and to, and in this respect, we can defeat the evil that is before us.
However, Nathan, that's
all that evil.
Nathan, I agree with you in theory, but the trouble is, until the American people turn back to God, why, God is not going to bless this country again.
That's
and unfortunately,
right.
The church has been neutralized, both the Catholic and the Protestant church, and I, you know, I don't even know about the Jewish church. You could tell me more about that, but I feel that it's going to take really almost a miracle to rekindle that spirit of belief in the one true God here in this country. This is why I do what I do. But I agree with you. Until we accept the fact we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political battlefield, nothing is going to change.
Doctor, I can comment on the Jewish establishment as well as the Christian. You know, and both, there's plenty of belief in God, quote-unquote. In other words, but it's kind of a belief that has been neutralized. I think, as you said, you know, it doesn't necessarily inform people. It's the belief in the modern Western sense and not a belief in the ancient Middle Eastern sense, where belief, where faith meant also action.
All right.
Faith didn't just mean a certain set of beliefs. You know, it's not the world's biggest deal of certain doctrines that everybody gets all upset about. You know, even the gay issue, you know, that's important, but, you know, what about adultery? What about heterosexual fornication? What about greed? What about covetousness?
Well, I'll tell you what, we have some wonderful books on that. I think one of the finest ones would be Idols in the House. Hey,
I never hear religious conservatives talk about greed or covetousness.
Oh, well, we do talk about that.
Well,
here,
you,
but
I don't mean you. I just mean in general.
Okay.
People need to wake up. Wake up, America.
Okay, thanks so much, Nathan. And let's go to Bert, who's calling from Ohio. Hi, Bert.
Hi, how you doing, Doctor?
Doing fine. You have a question?
A question and a comment. I listen to your show, and you, like, turn my views, like, totally around, and I want to thank you for that. What I did is I met up with my former pastor and best friend down in Florida, gave him a copy of your newsletter, May and June, just came back from there. They're listening to you now. What my comment is, and concerning your last caller, is I believe that revival's possible. I mean, that's one of my prayers, and I really feel that if God's people get behind this, that these things will go away by His hand. I mean, and I just wanted to put that in there real quick, and that was just basically my comment. I do believe in that revival you have talked about in the past couple of months.
We have to pray for it, and we have to work for it, and the old adage, and you've heard me say this before, is that you can't sell life insurance till you can convince people they're going to die, and you can't get either Christians or non-Christians to really start doing what's right, until they realize there's a problem, and that's why we do what we do. But hopefully, if it's in God's providence, we will have a revival, and that's what I pray for.
Me too. Thank you, sir.
God bless, and thanks so much. And again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got Bob calling in from Texas. Hi, Bob.
How are you doing, Dr. Stan?
Doing fine. And now, you listen to us on shortwave internet or radio?
I'm listening to you on the internet, but I have listened to you on the radio when I lived in California, but I live in Texas now.
All right, fine.
And I'm a long-time listener, and I've wanted to call you for a long time because I have something stuck in my craw that I can't rid myself of, and I've listened to some of your speeches at different times. One of them you were speaking about the Orient Express and how all of these various entities are all stabbing us to death and bringing on this New World Order, and I believe that that's correct. But I also think that people have, first of all, they've gotten away from the Word of God, and they don't trust God. They trust Social Security. They trust the government. They trust insurance companies for life insurance, like you just mentioned. But today, I was listening to your program, and for a big part of your program, you were talking about the fake evidence that there were some Islamics involved in 9-1-1. And I think that the problem is a root problem, systemic, that goes back to the establishment of the State of Israel, which I want to put this to you in the form of a question. If some great ancestor of Cochise went to the United Nations and said, God gave my ancestor 6,000 years ago this land, I want you to go kick those European white people out of there and give it back to us, there's no way in the world that that would ever take place, and it would be considered ludicrous. And the State of Israel was brought on through a lot of propaganda, and I hear Christian men like yourself that seem to support it, and Steve Quayle claims to be a Christian and supports the state of Israel, but the state of Israel is the root of the problem. And when we find people in our government, it appears almost to be like the Sanhedrin, with Wolfowitz, Wormser, Feith, Zakim, and then Sandy Berger. He's stuffing documents in his, that are above top secret, and nobody's saying anything about it. And everybody's afraid to talk. Everybody's afraid to say anything about this problem that we have. And the problem stems from a fraud, because there's not one other nation state that was ever established on the planet Earth based upon the criteria that somebody's ancestor 6,000 years ago said they gave the land to them.
I see. Did you believe the scriptures, the Holy Scriptures?
Yes, I do believe the scriptures.
I see. Do you believe that God did give that land to Abraham?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
That doesn't mean that the secular world that we live in, do you believe that United Nations is a God-fearing organization?
Absolutely not. And
okay.
I don't believe that the land of Israel today is really God-fearing. I believe that there's some God-fearing Jews there, but I believe it's primarily a secular state. But I believe God does have a plan, and I believe at this time in history he's called the Israeli people or the Jews back to Israel. Some of them may be not be real Jews, but you and I are going to disagree on that.
Well, we can disagree, but I would like for somebody to be able to point out to me, because, you know, I think God gave us a brain, and I believe that Abraham was given the land, and I believe it was inherited by Isaac and Jacob, who was later called Israel, and I believe that there was 12 tribes of Israel, and I don't believe that the people that are in Israel today represent those 12 tribes. At best, they represent one.
Oh.
So, and the people that are running our government and the people that are running that government that call themselves Jewish people, I don't believe are religious Jews. Like you said, I believe that most, for the most part, they're atheistic or satanic. I think would be a better way to put it.
All right, I won't disagree. I believe that there's Satanism and the disciples of Satan working in every government in the world today. There are good people working there, but there's satanic people working there as well. So what's your solution?
Well, I would like to share with your listening audience what I think actually happened on 9/11. I think that the Mossad and the CIA organized and designed the plan. I believe that they remote controlled the aircraft that may have carried some CIA and some Arabs on the planes, just in the event that the remote control was somehow compensated for and they landed the aircraft. And that way they would have a plausible denial that they were remote controlled flying. Or flown. I believe that our government, some of the people in our government, the CIA and the Mossad, are joined together at the hip. I heard right on your program, Joel Skousen said it's a seamless relationship, and I believe that it is.
But you see, it's not just the CIA and the Mossad, it's the Pakistani intelligence, all of the intelligence agencies,
none
of them are working together, and there is within the CIA some very dedicated, patriotic people, and there's some very evil people, and I've been told that by people who worked in and for the CIA. Hey, we're going to have to go. Do you want to make one more point before we go to Pete in calling from Oklahoma? Go ahead.
Well, I would just say that I am supportive of people on an individual basis, and I'm not a bigot, and I would actually be offended if someone called me a bigot, but I still believe that we have to look at things for what they really are, and if the United Nations has put out a mandate to establish the state of Israel, and they claim that they're doing it because those people were promised the land by God, that's a lie. Because the United Nations doesn't do anything for God.
Now, you're absolutely right, but I believe that God can work around the United Nations, don't you?
I think God has a sense of humor.
All right, fine. So I really believe, it's my belief, that you know the Jews are in there, in that area, for a time. I believe that there are people in our government who hate the Jews. That's why they forced them to give up 95% to 97% of their land, you know, in this peace, land for peace. That's the most ridiculous thing in the world. If the Zionists are running Washington, D.C., they're doing a terrible job. Hey, look, thanks for calling very much. Bye-bye. And let's go to Pete for calling from Oklahoma. Let me just make one more comment. I don't know who was behind this, but I believe there was a dark force behind what happened on 9/11. And we haven't got all the results in. We may never know exactly what happened. But, you know, if we're going to say it was certainly the Mossad and the CIA, why not the Pakistani intelligence and our intelligence. Certainly, there's a great deal to equate to the General Mahmoud Ahmed, who we have information on. Anybody who wants to see it, we'll give it to you from other sources, from Indian sources, Indian intelligence sources, that the General Ahmed was actually sent a wired $100,000 to Muhammad Atta about a month before the attack, and he was in Washington, D.C., we know, on the morning of the attack. That's Pakistani intelligence. So we can get into all sorts of things, but I just don't want to say it was the Mossad specifically. There's some people who think the Jews are behind everything, and I don't believe that's true at all. I think it's very easy to get to focus on one group without realizing we're involved in a battle against a Luciferian conspiracy. And when you understand that, things make a lot of difference. And of course, our previous caller was talking about my story of the murder on the Orient Express. Let me suggest, if you haven't seen the video, The Brotherhood of Darkness, subtitled The Murder on the Orient Express, or The True Story of the Murder on the Orient Express. Why don't you get it? And hopefully it will introduce you to a Luciferian conspiracy that infiltrates every aspect of our life today. Well, let's go to Pete. Hi, Pete. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. You've made two statements that I had never heard before, and I just wanted to ask you again. Who made the edict, and on what date, that there would be no more armed pilots?
We talked to a fellow named Dave Maquette, and he is he's the chairman of the Pilots Security Association, or Pilots, something of the sort. You can actually order that tape, my interviews with him, and I had heard this before, and I have a clipping of it someplace, but I wanted to get it confirmed from somebody else, and he confirmed that story, and we interviewed him on the American Freedom Network, and again on Radio Liberty, and 2 months before the 9/11 attack, an order was given out that henceforth no pilot would be allowed to carry a weapon. Now, some of them did carry weapons surreptitiously. They had the authorization to carry them with the permission of the airline. But 2 months before the attack, I think that was in July, the edict was put out that henceforth no pilot would be allowed to carry a weapon. And what is amazing is, if you read the staff report of the 9/11 Commission, they knew the attack was coming. At the FAA put out the report. Why would they have done something so stupid unintentionally?
Mm-hmm. And thank you. And the second item, you said something about a man who was spirited off to Britain after he came in and told of the plot.
Yes,
what was the timing of that incident?
There was April of the year 2000, and you can talk if you want the clippings on that. We have them. They're referenced in my latest newsletter, or you can give us a call off the air, and we'll be glad to send you copies of those clippings. But the story was told, at least in part, by Eleanor Hill in her testimony on the 18th of September, 2002, when she testified before the Joint Select Committee, and you should be able to pull that down off the internet, otherwise you can purchase the entire testimony from us. But in April of 2002, there at the Newark office of the FBI, this Pakistani comes in and says, I am part of a secret hijacking group, and I've been trained in Pakistan, and we are going to actually hijack one of your 747s. There are five or six other people here. I'm to meet with them, and they gave me $3,000, you know, to live on. I gambled it all away, and I don't want to be a hijacker anyway. I'm married, and I just don't like this idea, because we're going to blow up the plane and we'll all be killed, and I don't want to die. And so they give him a couple of lie detector tests. He passes them, and then the most amazing thing, the FBI office in Newark reports this to Washington, D.C., and they say, get that man out of town, get him out of this country, and you're accompanying him on his flight back to Great Britain. And that's what happened. You know, they got him, instead of trying to find out who the hijackers were and, get this man to infiltrate the group, they got rid of him. And the question is, why would they do something like that unintentionally? Or maybe they didn't want him here in the United States. They certainly didn't want to infiltrate this group. How many times have you heard, gee, we just couldn't get anybody in the hijacking group? Well, I think they had people in the hijacking group. I think they knew it was exactly what was going to come down. But they were already looking forward to the explanation they were going to come up with. And if you want to read it, it's in the National Commission on Terrorism report. It's the so-called Paul Bremer report. I think it came out in January of 2000 or 2001. And they just talk about how Pearl Harbor was just all these mistakes. Pearl Harbor was one mistake after another. People didn't talk to one another. It sounds just like what the 9/11 Commission came up with. And I think they were telling people how they were going to put this over on the American people.
And I'm sorry, one more time, it was in April of 2000.
April of 2000, right.
Clinton was still president.
Right.
Okay. Thank you kindly. Bless you, sir.
All right. Thank you. Okay, fine. Well, we've got, our good friend, Dr. Wolf. We're just about out of time. Hi, how are you doing, David?
Well, that's what always happens to me. I seem to be always the last. I want to be the first sometime. Doc, I have you're coming through beautiful here in the Sunshine Radio Network in Rochester and upstate New York. I have a little eyesight that I've used on this land for Israel. God gave the land of Israel to the Jew, okay? That the Jew is ultimately the Lord Jesus Christ. And no matter what the devil does and who deals with him, unbelieving Jew, believing Jew, unbelieving Gentile, and it's going to be for the Jew, Jesus Christ. And what is so exciting, Doc, is when you and I are saved, which we are, we're in that Jew, and that Jew is in us. And so, Doc, listen to me.
We're out of time. God bless you, David.
Okay.
Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City? Well, a very important video is the cover-up in Oklahoma City. It really consists of film clips that were actually taken from video footage shot during the first 2 or 3 days after the bombing. And you'll actually hear the commentators in Oklahoma City talking about the second bomb, the third bomb that had been disarmed. Now, if they were actually disarming bombs there, why didn't we hear that throughout the rest of the country? You'll actually hear an interview with one of the gentlemen who was in the Murrah building at the time that the bomb went off, and he had time then to jump underneath his desk before the blast blew in from outside. Obviously, there were two bombs, one inside, one outside. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, let me just mention a few of the other items that we have that go into the background of what really happened and the things that led up to the 9-1-1 attack. If you have not yet seen the video, Jihad in America, you really need to. It was actually made in 1993-1994, and it showed a lot of FBI footage, of them going to the terrorist training camps here in the United States, then going into Oklahoma, and you see these Islamic terrorists there recruiting people and talking about the attack on the towers of America's financial institutions, speaking of the World Trade Center, of course, and that was in 1988. All of this was shot by the FBI. It was put together, really interviews with FBI agents, pointing out that the Islamic terrorists were here in the United States, and they'd been here for many years. This is 1994. And that was shown one time, video was shown one time on the PBS, and then suppressed here in America. How do you do that? Well, if you're the intelligence agencies, you can tell people to do exactly what you want to. You can give them an offer they can't refuse. So like the Mafia, which the CIA worked with very closely. And if you doubt that, you need to get the book Double Cross. It's the story of the Mafia and the CIA and what happened to the head of the Mafia when, of course, the CIA turned on him. But Jihad in America is the most amazing video. And I will tell you, we had the hardest time getting it so I could offer it to you. I mean, it's 1995, but you'll be spellbound by this. You need to get everybody to watch this, because it's very obvious as you read this video. The government knew, had infiltrated this whole Islamic terrorist movement, but we can't let the American people know. Jihad in America, by Stephen Emerson. We also carry his book, American Jihad. You need to have this information to really understand what happened in America. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I was just telling our local listeners about the video Jihad in America. If you have not seen it, you need to get it. We have got a good supply of them in. We think it's a very important video because it shows you the FBI had thoroughly infiltrated this whole Islamic terrorist movement beforehand. And of course, this video was actually released in 1994, and it was shown one time And then, of course, somebody with tremendous power and influence gave an offer to our media and said, don't show it again. And it was never shown again in America. Jihad in America is available through Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then we do hope that many of you want to get the book we carry. It's called Bin Laden, The Man Who Declared War in America. It's the story of Osama bin Laden. And, of course, it was written actually before the 9/11 attack. We have another book called Dollars for Terror, written in 1999. Why is that book important? Why, very simply, because in 1999, a Swiss journalist spent 4 years researching the background of the Islamic terrorist movement because they'd killed one of his friends. A Moroccan Arab, but a moderate Arab, a moderate Muslim. He didn't want to fight or kill anybody, but they killed him because he wouldn't go along with their agenda. And what was the conclusion after 4 years of traveling throughout the Middle East? Why, Saudi Arabia, our good friends in Saudi Arabia, were financing this Islamic terrorist movement, and Pakistani intelligence was financing, and the CIA was working with them. And that was the subject of Dollars for Terror, because if it's really true, and it was written in 1999, long before 9/11, why, think of the implications. What were our CIA agents doing, and what were we funding? Of course, it's all secret. I mean, recently you've heard this story about three people over there in Afghanistan, and they were torturing members of the Taliban and other people, and oh, they claim they're working for the CIA, and the CIA says, why, we never heard of them. Why would three people be over there torturing Afghanistan, you know, people, and hanging them upside down and doing everything horrible and inhumane to them? Well, they're CIA black book budget operations, of course. This is the way they work. And they commit all sorts of crimes. And I've actually talked personally to three CIA assassins, you know, who've told me that they were approached by the CIA to do assassinations. If you read the book, The Fixing Intelligence by General William Odom, he asked the question, should the CIA be committing assassinations today? Should the CIA have their agents working as journalists? Should the Army, the military, or Defense Department, I guess was his words, be collecting dossiers on American citizens? Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the loss of freedom. What are you going to do to help us? Well, first of all, you can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. You can get educated. You can read the material that we have available for you about how the CIA and the Mafia work together. The book is written by the brother of the head of the Mafia. I think it's fairly good. It's called Double Cross. So much information. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to send you a copy of our July newsletter that goes into what really happened on the morning of September 11th. And then we hope that you'll take the catalog, you'll go through it, you'll order our items, you'll maybe join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help finance what we do 5 hours a day. You'll go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. You can hear us out there on the Internet 5 hours a day and not get much of anything accomplished. You can listen 4 hours a day on shortwave. And if you don't have a shortwave set, we've got great shortwave sets. Go to our website, pull down our newsletters, copy them. Talk to others. I talked to a young man today. He just found out about what's going on just this last month. Fascinated by learning that there's a whole world out there he didn't even know existed. And then we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and our ministers. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.